I'm going to tell you a few stories. All you have to do is listen.
Hello and welcome to another movie podcast. My name is Oscar, and with me today is
Luke.
There you go. And
Ralph.
From each other's computers and each other's homes. This is episode 103. And what we typically do is review three movies. Those three movies this time are going to be Bad Education, currently streaming on Hulu. I think Hulu Plus or Hulu. I mean, not Hulu. I say Hulu, didn't I? HBO, I meant to say. Forget Hulu. HBO, now HBO Plus, HBO, whatever they have. As well as Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind, which is a documentary also on HBO. We're kind of focusing on HBO this time around. And then we'll conclude our reviews with talking about 1931's Charlie Chaplin classic, City Lights. And these are all picks from Roth's own brain. His own brain decided these movies. You can always find us at otherpodcast.com, not to mention the iTunes or whatever you're in listening to us. And at otherpodcast.com, you have the rest of this kind of ongoing marathon where City Lights belongs in, which is we're doing a sight and sound list marathon of the best movies that this organization has comprised with a lot of other filmmakers and all over the world. Top movies of all time kind of thing. And City Lights is one of them. So that's why we're discussing it. If you want to find out what other movies we've done, including Casablanca, Night of the Hunter, Apocalypse Now, things like that, you're gonna check it out. See it there. And as well as our other marathons. It's all fun stuff. And not to mention our top tens. And, you know, bonuses stuff that we used to do before we get more bonus later on and sometime in the future. But anyway, I digress. Let us talk about how we've been doing. Luke, why don't you give us a rundown? How you been over the last 2 weeks?
So far, so good. Can't complain. Nothing really new on my end that I can think of.
That you can think of? But you started last time. Let's see. Last time, I think you were on vacation. Are you back?
Kind of.
One day.
One day, and I go back to work tomorrow.
Oh, okay, wow. So you were still on vacation all between last time and now almost.
In a nutshell, yeah.
Yeah. Are you the type that likes to always constantly work, keep busy, or no?
Depends.
Would you rather be lazy is my point. I guess, I don't know. Because some people are like, you know, workaholics, maybe. Or like can't do nothing, you know?
Oh, like you just can't keep steady, is that what you're saying? Like you can't just sit at home all day not doing jack shit.
Right.
So you need to do something, so you'd rather work.
Right, exactly. That's exactly thing.
The way I see it is, if I'm getting paid, I guess I'd rather be at home.
If you're getting paid, oh, I see. If you're getting paid to be at home, you would rather be at home.
Facts.
Got it. But I was asking Luke, though.
Yeah, ass.
Well, you took way too long to answer a question that was very simple.
No, simple for you?
Just yeah. Okay, forget it. Just talking. So, no worries. Okay, nothing new with you. So what's the answer then?
When I'm at work, I prefer to work. But when I'm not, I just rather do what I want to do. Whether it's just veg out on the couch, watch TV, or play some games.
I don't know.
Or just spend hours and hours on Wikipedia, going down that hole.
Wikipedia?
Yeah, you look at one thing, and then you start looking at another thing, and next thing you know, hey.
You have 10 tabs open. I get it.
Right.
I know, I'm in one right now. You should see my windows. Way to make your answer political. Like, it's like a non-answer, but thank you. Ralph, what have you been up to? Jesus.
Not watching movies, I'll tell you that much.
No, I know. You're really bad at watching movies.
I'm very god-awful at that, actually. I just always feel like I have the time. I always feel like I have the time to watch movies, and then by the time it comes to record the episode, I never watched anything. I watch stuff. I just watch TV. I've been watching TV. I've been watching a lot of Twitch also, a lot of game streamers.
I noticed that last time I was up there.
Playing video games as well, but at the same time, I think I took a little bit of a break, and I think I'm about to be kind of screwed. I think I'm working like, what's tomorrow? Thursday. I think I'm working like 8 days in a row. So
you're back in full force, huh?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I know you can't blame like sporting events because there aren't none. some.
There is. UFC just started back up, so there is sporting events.
No, but before, for a long
time. Yeah, but no one's traveling to them in mass force.
Yeah, but I didn't travel to them either. I just watched them at home, the comfort of my house.
Still, there's not enough of that to...
My thing is come September. I'm a football guy, American football. So
September 2021?
That's funny. September-ish is when the season starts. We will see then. That's okay. Usually when I have my issue of movies. Okay.
All right. But otherwise, nothing much?
No, just doing the usual stuff, taking care of, school activity and stuff like that. I'm a teacher now, so it's great,
But you basically are. You should get a degree. Like an associate.
Why not?
Yeah, right. Oh man, I can hear the bird every time. It's great.
It's like it's awesome.
Card. It's like a calling card.
Isn't it?
Yeah. It's nice to like it. In case everyone wonders, what is that noise? It's coming from Ross End. It's his something bird. What's the name? It's like a dove something.
Presto.
No, what kind of bird it is?
Oh, it's a diamond dove.
Diamond dove. There you go. That's what I meant. All right. So, as far as what I've been up to, nothing.
We don't need to get into that.
Okay, you're right, we don't. All right, let's continue on with
our... No, what have you been up to, Oscar? Come on.
Slinging coffee again, right?
Slinging coffee, yeah.
Was I back at work last time when we recorded? I'm not...
You were about to.
No, you were about to.
Oh, okay, then yeah. I've been, it's 2 weeks. I think I must have started right around there.
How is it to be a drug dealer again?
It does feel that way.
Oh man, I've been waiting for you guys to open up again.
And it looks shady too because we have people approach the door. We can't let anyone in, right? So we have a table blocking the door. So they come in, we ask for their names, and we instantly know their package, right? So to speak. And then we tell them to stand back, close the door. We put something on the table. We walk away.
Drop the money.
Suddenly the bag is gone,
That's real.
It does kind of seem shady.
Right.
It could be God knows what's in there. Oh, yeah, you're Madeline. You like mescaline. That's right.
Right.
It is. Right. No, it's been fine. It's been a little boring. It's like a slower version, definitely, of my usual Starbucksing days. And we're increasing it, though. Business has been steadily coming up as other places that have been open, that have been open during the quarantine, like the drive-through places. Those places have been obviously going down because all the Starbucks are open now instead of just a few. So there's been the balancing of the what's it called of the force is happening, right? And and then next week I think we're gonna be opening a little later, like an extra hour and a half.
Oh shit!
Because right now we're only
open late night coffee,
late 3 night.
I think we're going to be open to 4:30 or something. And then, at some point we're going to do grab and go where people can come in and order, but they can't stay and then leave. So that'll be even more people, I guess, more access, stuff like that. We're slowly and surely getting there. It's been
That's
fine.
Dope.
It's boring. It's the same old thing. Not a big deal. It's just a lighter version of every other day.
And how do you feel about being back? Do you feel comfortable being back at work? Is it kind of refreshing instead of just being at home doing jack shit?
Well, I wasn't doing just jack shit. But yeah, overall, it is better. I do like doing something all the time. Even if it's dumb, like playing a game, a game that maybe I would never have played or I've gone into all the minutia of a game that I like.
For sure.
Like sometimes I skip side quests of a game for a reason. But I was keeping busy with other things that you guys already know about. But it is nice to work and get paid for something also. I like waste my time with that too. So yes,
I've been
definitely enjoying it, I guess, on that level. But I'm comfortable. I'm not worried about any whatever. We all have to wear masks, so that's annoying all the time.
Yeah.
It is annoying. Oh, I agree.
Gets itchy. Gets annoying.
So you don't let anybody in, but you have to wear masks, I guess, for the food.
Yeah, well, for each other, right? Because we can't...
Each other also. Yeah. I guess if you care about each other, yeah.
There's still 3 to 4 people at a time there, so...
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah, that's basically it. All right, let's continue on here with our recent discoveries. I don't have much, and it looks like Luke doesn't have much either. And Raph, I know you have nothing. Luke, what do you have for us today?
Finally booted up the old Netflix machine, and I finally saw something that's been sitting on my list for quite some time, which is El Camino, a Breaking Bad movie. Finally got a chance to see it. Because obviously, I think when it came out last year, I was probably in Bufo, Alaska. So, hey.
Oh, right. No streaming.
Right. Very limited streaming, if any.
What was your level of, like, how do I say this? How much did you want to see this movie?
When it first came out, I really wanted to see it, but then I kind of just forgot about it, and then I was going through my Netflix list, and I was like, oh, El Camino. First, I was like, what the hell is El Camino? And then I'm like, oh, El Camino. Yeah. But,
you just had the same title, just in a different inflection.
Right, but right. It hit me what the El Camino was.
No, I know, I'm just making fun of you.
Yeah.
So, okay, so, I mean, because I can see fans of Breaking Bad, even diehard fans, not being into another thing, you know, feels like, yeah. Right, you know, like, that's why I was asking. But it looks like you were excited, so what'd you think?
I felt it was just one really long episode of Breaking Bad that just focused on Pinkman. I liked it. It kind of gave a little closure into his whole escapade. And, yeah. Mm-hmm. While I was in Alaska, he ended up in Alaska. Ta-da.
That's true. I think we made that joke because we reviewed that here.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we might have, yeah.
We reviewed it. I'm pretty sure we did on the show with Roth, and we mentioned that Alaskan joke because you were in Alaska joke at the time.
I was, yes. So,
yeah. And now, and obviously, it further cements the proof that you don't listen to our show. Otherwise,
no, I don't.
That we made that joke,
right? Not even the ones you're not part of.
I don't want you to spoil these movies for me, Oscar. That's why.
Wow.
Oh yeah, that's a good reason. Why don't you watch the goddamn movies?
I couldn't. I was in Alaska.
No, I mean in general. Okay. All right. Cool. I'm glad you liked it. Yeah, I thought it was the perfect closure for that for mm-hmm. Jessica. That's the one closure we didn't get in that show. Cool. I'm glad you liked it. What else do you got there?
So the second one I saw is Superman Red Sun, S-O-N. I saw it at Target, and I was like, holy shit, I didn't know this became a movie. It's based off the 2003 comic book, where it's a what-if scenario. What if Superman had landed in Russia instead of the United States?
Oh, that's, yeah, okay.
And, yeah, it's pretty much him, and he's kind of, like, very pro-communism, pro-Russia, that whole thing. It's interesting. It is different than the book from what I remember reading it back a long time ago. They did definitely change the plot on there, but it's still a good watch. It is one of those, you know, DC animated movies, so if you stop paying attention for, like, 30 seconds, you miss, like, a lot of stuff because it moves really fast.
Is that common for DC animation?
I feel like it is for some of the... For some of them, so.
Okay. I mean, I've seen plenty. I prefer DC animation overall than their live action stuff 9 times out of 10. But yeah. I guess I didn't notice that it would be that much faster pacing than other things. But I'm sure you're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard of this. I've known about it. You know, it's almost like a dark version of Superman, but that's kind of politically whatever. Not racist, it's a different word for it. Politically something, biased maybe, to say that, because Russia is just a different country, right? But yeah, it's always interesting. So, was it one and done, or is it a series?
No, it's one and done.
Okay.
Yeah. But what?
No, go ahead.
No, I mean, it's just a different whole thing. Like, you know, in this one, you know, Lois Lane is actually married to, like, Lex Luthor, and he becomes, like, the president of the United States. Whereas Superman ends up, like, fairly in the beginning of the movie, like, killing Stalin and taking over because he saw how he was, like, putting people in gulags. There's a weird Russian Batman equivalent. Well, he's the Batman, but he's Russian, which is weird.
Okay.
Yeah, they also have a Wonder Woman there as well. She's, like, a close ally to Superman.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But why? Just because the dude landed somewhere else? Because one dude landed somewhere else, everyone else is so much more different that they're
the only one I don't get is the Batman. Why is there a Russian Batman? Or clearly, I don't see what would have brought Batman.
It would be bad if it was Bruce Wayne that, like, lives in Russia. That would be bad. But if it's like a vigilante type that takes, like, a Batman type thing to do something, I can see that. It was his own country being raped by a superhero. I mean, I can see that. But I don't see Wonder Woman changing. Well, she's been alive for way long. I don't understand.
But she kind of sees, like, Superman has this message of, like, peace and prosperity for people and keeping them free from, like, the whole capitalist system and things like that. So she goes with it.
Okay. All right. Lois Lane, I don't get, though. That's okay. That's fine. So that's Red Son, Superman Red Son.
Yeah.
Available. I'm sure you can stream it. You bought it, right?
But yeah, I bought the Blu-ray DVD combo. People can but you probably can.
Yeah, I seen it on.
Doesn't DC have that service?
Still? Yeah. DCU.
Yeah. Is that still a thing?
Yeah, it is. I think Danny has an account.
Okay.
It's true. He is a
DC. Well, it's on my iTunes, so.
Yeah.
Feast awesome. Gluttons.
Feast Gluttons. All right, so that's what Luke's been watching. What I got here is these two movies. I got two movies that I've never seen before. They're both horror movies. The first one is a movie called Frightmare. All one word, like nightmare, but with frights. Get it? I hope you get it. Anyway.
I get it.
This movie I saw, it was one of those one-offs. It's from the 80s. When his loyal fans decide to steal his fresh corpse from the mortuary to party with it all night long, a true horror film star returns from the grave as a ghastly bloodsucker bent on revenge. At least, will he spare his followers? I'm just reading the damn thing. This is such a strange movie. It's not good. It's not very good. It's also kind of
aren't
like,
there two Frightmares?
Yeah, there's several, actually. There's like three. There's one called... There's two called Frightmare, exactly. There's one Frightmares, plural. So there's like three or four. And but this is the 1983 version, for those wondering. Okay. There's a 70s version, too. I did not see that one. And then there's like a 90s one, too.
And there's a band called Frightmare.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're a death metal grindcore band.
I mean, yeah, it's a good title for things. I can see Frightmare being a thing for people. A Frightmare on Elm Street. It's just as fine. But this movie is a victim of the 80s in the worst way, but also in the best way that people find it nostalgic for. In the schlocky, stupid acting, bad one-liner things that the 80s is known for, especially with horror and action, this movie is a victim of. So if you're into that kind of thing, automatically Frightmare is for you, especially if you want to make like a good drinking game out of it or just like a good old time with buddies, that kind of movie. Yeah.
Where was this? Where did you watch this on?
So I saw this on Mubi, the streaming service. Okay. And by the time you're listening to this, folks, it's going to be gone. Because it has like 5 days left, I think, before it goes away. Because that streaming service revolves its content. But I'm sure you can find it somewhere.
It's every 30 new movies a month, right? So essentially, like every day is a new...
Yeah, every day they put a new one in and take an old one out.
But everything has like a 30-day life cycle, right?
Yes.
Do they ever bring back movies?
Yeah, they do. They have. You could put things on watch lists, and if they ever do like a certain marathon or whatever curator is doing, whatever, whenever they're going to bring it up, they'll send you an email. And
like, oh, it's a definitely interesting service, especially for somebody like. Actually, I'm surprised me or you, Luke, don't watch it more often. I mean, I know we don't have an account, but
like, I tried.
Well, you guys have my account. I've offered it many times if you guys want it.
Yeah, I just have to get it.
Yeah, I guess so. Now that it's on my Apple TV, I've been using it more lately, and always there's always something on there that I've never heard of before, and never like that's a really interesting stuff from all around the world. So that's why I joined in on that. Been on it for like 3 years now, 4 years. Yeah, it's great. And I saw Frightmare there, and it's a fine movie. It's like the main character, the horror movie star that dies in the movie, and about the 40-minute mark in the movie comes back to life and starts killing all these teenagers. He's clearly like a Bela Lugosi type, 100%. He is ripping off Bela Lugosi. Or like, you know, you guys seen Ed Wood, right? You know, that, you know, Bela Lugosi is the actor that, you know, they portray him in the movie. I forget the actor.
The Dracula one?
Yes. Sorry. Yeah, sorry, it took me a second, because there's a lot of classic horror movies. Yeah, that actor who did those old movies, but I think he had died by then, or maybe he didn't want to do this movie if he was still around in the 80s, but yeah, this actor is clearly, like, ripping him off.
in a good way, or in, like,
in a homage? 80s, nope, in a shocky 80s way that horror movies, like, back then existed, you know?
But is it, like, also, like, Fright Night?
Kind of like Fright Night, except that movie, you know, can stand on its own, I think.
You know, I agree, but he's totally acting like a Bela Lugosi kind of guy.
But this guy's even acting more like he's
dramatized version of it or whatever.
Yes, like the movie starts off with him doing a scene, where he's like a Dracula type, literally. Like, it's really funny that way. So again,
I understand.
It's not exactly for me. The plot barely makes sense. You know, I don't look for a good movie in this. I didn't know what I was going into, so I was surprised by everything. So so I guess I wasn't in that mood to watch this movie. But there you go, Frightmare. It's what it is. It's one of those movies that's like, it's like what it is. If you're into it, you would have seen it, or you would seek it out. If not, you will never see it again. All right, so the next one here is a movie that's way better and also way weirder. It's called The House That Jack Built.
And what house is that?
Oh, it's a fucked up house. Let me tell you, this is a horror movie. But it's a horror movie told in a very strange way. It's made by Lars von Trier, the famous guy who did Melancholia. He did Nymphomaniac.
Nympho, there we go.
Antichrist, Dogville.
Lars von Trier?
Yeah, that's Lars von Trier. He did Dogville, all those fucked up movies that I was really into. The one we did with that singer. I forgot her name. Anyway, this movie is his latest one, I think, or one of his latest ones. I completely missed it. My buddy Jay recommended it to me, and I rented it. So
he hasn't made a movie since Nymphomaniac.
Oh, so maybe this came out before Nymphomaniac, I guess.
I don't know. So that's the besides this one, I'm sorry. This is the next one after, so it's a five-year gap.
Got it. Yeah. I guess so. Yeah, sometimes he does gaps. I guess this is the longest gap. Anyway, this movie stars Matt Dillon as a serial killer. And the whole movie is, I mean, if anyone has seen Lars von Trier, he has a lot of awkward, kind of like dry comedy into his like fucked up movies and premises. So expect that too. Like, it opens with Uma Thurman and Matt Dillon. Like, she's playing some woman stranded on the side of the road, right? And Matt Dillon's car comes up and tries to help her. And she's like constantly talking and annoying and pestering him. And in a way, like making fun of his manhood even. Like, it's so weird. Like, oh my God, you look like a serial killer. I'm kidding, you're not. And he's like super awkward conversations. And as you can imagine, it ends with him just bashing her fucking face in. And it's hilarious. It's a hilarious punchline. It's meant there to be a punchline. And it starts from there, and it continues on to some really messed up things, as you guys can imagine, including trying to fire one bullet through the brains of like 10 people. Like, that's how, like, the guy really goes for it, you know. But the most fucked up scene is the hunting scene with the family. And for those who have seen it, you guys know what I'm talking about. But throughout the whole movie, though, the movie's separated by six parts, incidents, incident one, incident six, and so on. And there's voiceover in the movie where Matt Dillon's talking to someone. And you hear the other voice, too. And you think the whole time that it's some sort of psychologist, maybe, or maybe it's like maybe someone in prison. Maybe he got caught and he's talking to someone in the future about his past. And the surprise of what that is, and the epilogue that follows because of when you find out who that person is and what their meaning is really out of left field. And I really dug it. And I'm being vague on it because, this again, I never heard of this movie. I missed it completely. I know you guys haven't seen it. Rob, I think that ending is meant for you.
For me? So,
yeah, you would get it more than anyone I know. You would get it more than anyone I know. So, like, just based on how well I know you. But so I guess I'm very vague on it. I would suggest for you to watch it whenever you can for that epilogue, because it's so particular and peculiar and weird and off-putting and fucked up. But it is something that you would recognize immediately, and you would totally love the visuals that comes with it. So I recommend it for that. The House That Jack Built, pretty fucked up serial killer movie. Kind of different flair than the usual serial killer movies. It's nowhere near the same as most movies out there. Lars von Trier definitely is weird. But I liked it way better than the other one. So check it out. I rented it, so it's not available anywhere, as I can see, streaming, but maybe you'll find it someday. All right, so that's all we got. We're going to take a little break here. When we come back, we're going to do our first review of the evening, which is going to be what, Ross?
Bad Education.
Bad Education. That's right. You know, it's been making, it got a little bit of buzz when this movie came out, which is kind of rare for an HBO movie. They don't, their shows get buzz, but not their movies so much, but this one did. So let's check it out. Stay with us.
Please join me in welcoming to the stage our district superintendent and my friend, Frank Tassone.
in Long Island. The town is only as good as its
public schools. The better the school system, the higher the price tag on the homes.
These are the best early decision numbers that we've ever seen.
I wanted to make a difference. I got us all the way to number 4, and I will get us to number 1.
Get us to first. That's all that matters.
Hey, Frank.
Yeah?
I've been doing some digging. I'm concerned with what I found.
The beloved superintendent of New York's Roslyn School District and his staff, friends, and relatives become the prime suspects in the unfolding of the single largest public school embezzlement scandal in American history. This is Bad Education, a movie directed by Corey Finley, written by Mike Makowski, and let me see, based on the article. Yeah, magazine article from Robert Colker. Hugh Jackman, Ray Romano, Walker White. Who else we got on this? Allison Janney. How could I forget Allison Janney?
Yeah.
We'll just stop there because there's other people, but before I keep going. Luke didn't know who he was. Rafael Casal. Other than that, yeah. I'm going to start with Luke. Luke, what is your first impression of Bad Education?
When did this take place in the X-Men storyline? No, it was a good movie. Kind of a word up my alley thing, you know, scandal, biopic.
Shocker.
Shut up. I dug it. I liked it.
Oh, yeah? What'd you like about it, besides the fact that it was up your
Hugh
alley?
Hugh Jackman, man.
He
nails it.
He did a good job. Oscar. Oh, what else? Oh, do you get something else before I send this Oscar?
The way he played, Frank Tassoni, that with the whole charisma and trying to manipulating everyone into, kind of getting away with what he was been doing.
Yeah, I was so curious at what he was going to do in that scene. That whole scene where there's
that man could talk himself out of anything.
Right. Yeah, it's a good job. Oscar, what did you think?
I thought for like half the movie, I thought I was a standard biopic or not a biopic maybe, but about an incident, right? A historical biopic, I guess, about an event or something. And it felt really paint by numbers at first and stuff like that. And it felt normal. And Hugh Jackman, everyone's good. No one's like amazing, but everyone's good. And I was like, okay, I'm trucking along, no big deal. And then, but the movie uses the awkward, small interactions of the first half to make bigger and obviously, law-threatening, jail-threatening, stuff for the second half of the movie that, snowballs into these conversations that I don't want to see happen. But they're wonderful, but they're also really great.
Yeah,
and it made me really like the movie, the whole true story aspect. I never cared about it the whole time, but it was interesting how the movie shows it out, rolls out the carpet for who's to blame, and when to blame it because of what happens to one character, and then what happens to the second character is based on what that first character had to deal with. Now I'm obviously being vague on spoilers, but the way they treated one person, will compound into how they're treated to the next person that's guilty of something. And it goes with that. And, I think the movie played off its facts pretty well. And I think it was really cool. And it unfolded really nicely. It feels like, it feels like that high school movie, Election. Not as energetic or anything. Election is very unique and different. But it feels like Election, like this, like the drama of what's behind these doors in the school is minute. It's big for them, but it's minute, and it's like you're getting some access to it. But it starts snowballing into a real problem that should be newsworthy and all this stuff. And so, yeah, it was very interesting that way. I liked it. I really liked it. You, Ruff?
I actually did like it as well. I didn't know what I was getting into, to be honest with you. I was just kind of perusing HBO, and I was like, oh, this is, because usually HBO has a movie or two that is out around now-ish, and this is the only movie on their docket that I saw, and then that's why I picked the documentary that they had. or most current anyway.
Okay.
I wanted to pick something current as well, not just like random. Also, I also know that HBO tends to take their movies out of circulation and they're like no longer theirs or something. I don't know. It's really weird.
Okay.
But besides that, I didn't know it was based on true events or whatever until I saw that it was a biopic and I was like, oh, okay. So it's obviously based on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had fun with it. I do agree with you. It did feel paint by numbers, very much so, in the beginning as well. And it just felt very, I mean, it did take place in the early 2000s. So it did feel that vibe. That vibe was like the kind of 90s, but 2000s as well. So I think the vibe was caught pretty decent where it felt like we cared about like the subject matter. Like it was, we care enough about the students, but we don't care enough as well. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Was like a little mix of both. And so that was cool about that. And then it just felt like we emphasize a lot on the kids, but we don't care enough to, like, to fix their buildings and shit, to make their stuff look nice, you know, where they're educated. Yeah. It's just like, you're getting a top level education because you have top level people, but it doesn't matter about that. We don't care about that. We don't care about like if you did it in a fucking shed, because it does feel like,
yeah,
even when the girl's getting in the beginning of the movie, she's getting something photocopied and then like it's dripping on the photocopier. Like you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah,
like random stuff like that in the movie that you kind of see throughout. But other than that, yeah, the movie was cool. I think Hugh Jackson did a great job. What's it called? Overall acting, and as a gay person as well, I guess, because he plays as a gay person. And I like doing this to Luke at all times. Is do you know who that actor is? And because we watched this movie together, and I was like, "Oh, that's the guy from Blindspotting." And he's like, "No, it's not." And then I showed him a picture, and he was like, "What the fuck?"
You mean the guy he hooks up with?
Yeah.
Dancer in Vegas.
Yes. So that was fun. I saw him as a bartender, not a dancer, but it is what it is. Okay.
I mean, yeah, we met him as a waiter.
Bartender. Yeah.
Yeah, but even towards the end, they were like, oh, he's got this house with this dancer from Vegas.
No, I know,
like,
that.
Oh,
I know.
Did he go back to dancing?
Yeah, I guess so, maybe. But yeah, overall, it was a fun movie to watch. Yeah, I do agree with you also, Oscar, as in, like, there was certain scenes I'm like, I don't want to watch this. which I think is like, I think that's a good thing that a show or a movie or kind of anything entertainment wise, if they can bring something and then still portray it, and as long as they do it well, which the movie did it well, hard topics to talk about or just things that you kind of don't even want to see, interactions that, you know, how people are going to react or whatever. Like that Curb Your Enthusiasm thing going on.
I mean, Alexander Payne, who did Election, is famous for making those awkwardness, like,
yeah,
stand out more.
Stuff like that, yeah. That you definitely don't want to see, that if you have the control of, like, the controller, like, just to stop it, you could be like, I don't want to watch this scene, you know, like, it's kind of annoying. There was some moments in the movie for that, for sure. I don't know what else to get into besides getting into spoilers, I guess.
Yeah, we can get into spoilers. Luke, you good?
Oh yeah, we can.
Okay, cool. Let's get into spoilers for Bad Education, starting right now.
This is why you do not want to encourage the youth of America. Had he not told her, do not make, you know, you make it a fluff piece if you only want to make it a fluff piece.
He's not wrong.
Well, this is just the way that even if it's 100% true, which I'm sure part of it is.
I doubt that part's true.
I mean, whatever. No, not that conversation, but the fact that the story broke with the high school newspaper, I'm saying.
No, yeah, that part is true, I think.
Yeah, I mean, saying that's a sexy way for this corruption to come out. It's a unique way. It's once in a, that's like a needle in a haystack kind of way, right?
Right.
How often? That will never happen. Like, most times a real journalist will do it, or someone will flake, or someone goes to jail, someone fucks up and beats on the hooker, and then they get in trouble, whatever the hell. Usually it's something in the era of their own thing, not that the high school newspaper breaks the fucking story. So yeah, it's a very unique way to, for this, whole thing to unfold. I like how the girl figured it out too. We figured it out along with her too. Like, we noticed the water dripping on the printer, right? And we're like, what's all this money coming? What's with the sky shed, you know, and all this stuff.
The skywalk.
Skywalk.
It's revolutionary.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Skywalk. And the whole time, every time people kept dropping numbers, like money amounts, I was like, how much do schools get? The whole time. I was like, I'm positive. I know that there's complete huge gaps of differences between one school and another, especially if you consider like private school or whatever, huge differences. But I didn't know that public schools were that much more different from each other and like this gap, yep. This large of a difference in money and resources, which means the same thing. It's so weird. It was weird. I almost didn't believe it. I was like, is this movie exaggerating? But I'm sure it's not. I've seen other corruptions of this level too. But damn, that school got a lot of money in there through it.
Yeah, I think what they do a good job of is that it explains the housing market along with it and how taxes work and everything.
Yeah.
They just kind of mentioned it in the beginning when they're like doing really good.
Yes.
And about making it to number one or whatever because they're number four, right?
Yeah.
And how it's school education does make a big deal about where parents take their kids to, because you want to send them to a good education, you know. And if you're the number one place to be in your city or in your whatever, you want to move to that neighborhood so you can get better, or you want to move to that whatever county it is or however it works in that town, if it's townships, if it's whatever the case is. That's why people move to suburbs in the city of Chicago, because certain suburbs have better education for kids, or better schools, better ranked schools. And then
you can see it just from the outside alone. Or
right, but then you pay for taxes, and in those places you'll pay like a lot more in taxes, and then property values way higher because you have people who are obviously make really good money, like six figures all the time, who can't afford a place in those, or who move into those places, who then they raise the property value because they are, you know, blah, yada, 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 and they get into it, and it kind of feeds back into the education system.
Yeah, it's like a cause and effect cycle thing.
Very much so, yeah, very much so.
I was surprised, as I was saying. It's really interesting watching this, the numbers play around, you know.
Yeah.
Because Allison Janney is the first victim, right? And
yes.
I love how they treat her. Because she portrays herself a certain way, like the old hand, the codger maybe, who gets shit done, but no one fucks with her. And she's got like a tight grip on it, but one fuck up, right, with the son. And at first I didn't know where it was going. At first I thought
it's a nice little snowball.
At first I thought he stole the card because he like her daughter or her granddaughter, I don't know who she was, the other one that worked at the school with her, she was asking for like Christmas presents, right, or something like that, to go to that.
She wanted a PlayStation.
PlayStation for the kid, right? Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
PlayStation for the kid, and it starts off that way, and I was like, oh, I thought maybe like someone stole it from her, and then they're all going to get caught for this one thing, but no, like this was normal. She was remodeling. She got that house.
Multiple houses. She's got multiple houses.
Right. Multiple houses, right. And I was like, how much can they do without people noticing?
Well, I also like that the number that the auditor gets is a 230 or something, so he rounds it up to 250. He's not fazed by that at all. He's like, oh, that's all you found. Like, okay, we can make this work. Like, you know?
Because he's way worse.
Well, he's way worse, but like, I mean, it's just like, that's all you found? Shit, don't worry about this then. I'm going to deal with it as it comes up. But it is crazy because once you see the number at the very end of the movie, which is, I think, like, she had, 3 million or something like that, or 2 million?
Something like that, yeah.
And he had a million or something. It was crazy, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, the way they treat her, the way he is put in a position where, like, he not only just, I mean, to save face, yeah, but, like, to work with these people again in a school district, with these other people who are definitely more honest, who are not using the credit card freely and openly. He has to fire her, right? He has to fire Allison Janney's character. And then when he is on the hot seat, they have to fire him in the same exact feeling, in the exact same way, because he's been doing worse, or at least the same, as the one he just fired. So, and yeah, it was very, I like how the movie treated it that way. It would have been probably less interesting had it been both caught at the same time or something like that. It was very, very nice the way the movie did that.
Yeah, I didn't know much about the history of this, or much as in, at all.
I didn't know either.
Yeah. But I was wondering if they had cooked the books also for like the kids' education itself, because the movie's called Bad Education, but no one's actually receiving a bad education. Like, it's really
Number four education in the U.S. It's pretty goddamn good.
Pretty goddamn good, right? Exactly.
Right.
So I felt like it was a bad name for the bad title, because I felt like the superintendent was doing like, oh, we're faking numbers of like test results or something.
That's what I thought.
That's what I thought. As much as like he was embezzling money, or their assignments, right? As much as he was embezzling money, I figured that there was also on top of that for, because the movie's called Bad Education, but I guess it wasn't, and I was like, oh, okay,
they didn't deserve that number four ranking, right?
Right. I guess right. So.
Yeah. No, but they did deserve. I mean, they did. Well, I mean, they
all the work that went to it. Yeah, but it's crazy how, I guess, it's just like they never really focused on anything besides themselves. Them two, they had enough. Which is crazy how like all this money can just be not noticed. You know,
well, hey, yeah, people are rich there, though. They don't care. Little Johnny and little Jane will go to fucking Harvard just because they went to this high school. They don't give two shits what they're going to be paying or where money goes.
No, I'm saying is that the just like that auditor was just like not doing his job.
No, he wasn't. The guy who was in charge of all the paperwork, I forget this title, but the comptroller, whatever he is. He did not. I mean, he was also spineless, and they took advantage of that. But, like, yeah, they totally.
100%, yeah.
The guy did nothing. And I like how they talk about, you know, how they have, I guess, a government part of this whole education system, Department of Education, is that there's supposed to be people that, like our professional auditors that go from school to school, like from district to district, right, to double check what they're supposed to be doing there. And he was talking about, like, well, this guy could come in any second. I'm like, he hasn't come in the last 16 years. Has he ever come in? Like, no, he's never checked on stuff. I'm like, and that talks about how lax it can be here. In this country for the system of education, I'm saying, how bad it could be if you, like, pay them off, or if you treat them nicely, or if they look rich and well off, then they don't worry about them. Don't worry about checking their books, you know, that kind of problem. Like,
yeah. Now, what did you think about, I guess, like, a really key scene in the movie is Hugh Jackman's character telling the school board, like, controlling them to not go public, right away for Allison and Janice's big mistake or whatever. What did you think of that scene? Because I thought it was, did you buy what he was selling?
Well, not knowing where exactly the movie was going to go, I didn't know it was because of he was doing the same. I thought it was because of his homosexuality that he was saying that. I didn't believe his reason he gave them, but not in retrospect, it's because he was stealing way more money. Yeah.
That's definitely the reason. Way more than they had found at the beginning, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Also, paprika can go a long way.
Surprisingly, yeah.
So I don't remember that part.
That's at the very end when he's in jail. He uses it for makeup.
Oh yes, that's right. Yeah. Yeah, he's such a newscaster.
Yeah,
with all that makeup stuff. That whole, I like how he's like, he doesn't even know the secrets he has. Like, he had such a secret. Like, you think that boy, that dancer he was with, you think that was like his, I don't know, one of his opportunities, right, to be in a maybe sexual relationship with someone else, right, that he wants to be in a secret way. Like, it just fell into his lap. You think it's just like that, one of those things, and you think that might be one of the problems later on in the movie that would be uncovered or something. But no, he was cheating on his lover or partner or whatever. I know they weren't married, I guess. Already, like, from the secret home that he was paying, like, a lot of money for. Like, he had a huge secret in his own personal life that had nothing to do with the school, on top of the embezzlement, you know?
So, right.
Like, the guy has, like, the guy is much more dubious and, you know, kind of sneaky and kind of devilish that way because of that. So,
right.
And the movie kind of portrayed that really nicely. I'm glad that the homosexuality never came up as a huge plot point. That was good, because we're done with that now in cinema.
We are, but at the same time, it is a period piece.
No, I get it.
I mean, come on. Was
married at the time, but the movie handled it where it didn't have to.
Right? No, right, I agree.
Right, so that was good. That was nice. Again, because I thought that was going to be a huge part of the whole embezzlement.
Like, well, thing. I think you can do something as simple as he's showing off this picture of a... He has a picture of his wife on the thing on his in his desk, you know, or on his desk, and he's saying that he's this, but he's actually gay. Like, we don't have to actually say it; we can show all those things and then imply that this is of the time. We're at the point where we can do that in a movie and not have to beat somebody over the head and go, "Oh, he's gay." Well, it makes sense because it was like early 2000s, and no one was really outing themselves, especially since somebody in his power.
Well, you know, he already been in the school book for many years before that, too. It's not like he's newly gay or something like that. He's been...
No. I agree. But I'm saying he was hiding it his whole life. So.
Yeah, that whole thing with the wife 30 years ago, that was very strange. And that's Jenny's the only one who knew, apparently, and kept the secret really well.
Apparently.
Yep. She didn't say it, but, you know, we knew. All right. What else do you guys want to say about this movie? I really like the ending. I wasn't sure what it was gonna do, but it was like a weird ending. But I liked it though. Where he's in jail and he starts like walking, I guess, to the mess, or maybe I don't know what he's doing, but he's in jail.
Where they go back to the beginning,
right? And he goes onto the stage, right? He starts like fantasizing him being on the school board still, and onto number one, right? In this fantasy, his school board, whatever. They're on number one for the school and the whole country. I don't know what it is. And he fantasizes the end. It's kind of like the Requiem for a Dream ending, right? So what did you guys think of that? Because I liked it. I don't know. It was strange because we don't see any of that before the movie, before that part. But I thought it fit nicely at the end there. What do you guys think?
I guess I'll go. I liked it. I agree with you. I was like, that was a cool bookend, if you want to look at it that way. The whole intro. I just felt like he's just gonna fake it till he makes it, I guess, until he gets out. The very ending though, with the script, with the lettering, I'm sorry, with the words telling you what happened, like
the closure
as Luke likes to call it. The whole like oversee thing that New York City, he's still getting paid even though like he's been out already, but he got paid for all that time that he was in there. That's fucked up.
the oversight, yeah.
Yeah, the oversight. Yeah, that's the word.
It's one of those things where like really rich corruptors like this, you know, they still get away with it even though they didn't, you know. Like,
I mean, he didn't get away with it. He did to a certain extent, like, but
he made off.
He made off like a bandit, don't get me wrong, but yeah. He still technically did his time, I guess.
Yeah. It's like when someone forgets to sign the arrest warrant and the serial killer goes free the next day or something like that, right? Some weird oversight makes...
Yeah, because you didn't read the Miranda rights or something, you know?
Right. You know what? One thing I want to say also is I delight watching Ray Romano lately in movies, including this one. He's such a small role, but... I like it a lot, especially he has that one scene in the bleachers when everything is like being told the truth and everyone knows. And what do you call it? What's his name? I mean, actor. Hugh Jackman's character.
Hugh Jackman,
His character is like, he's begging for it. He's saying everything. He's spitballing. He's throwing any kind of thing he can say to get Ray Romano's character on the side and therefore the rest of the school board. And nothing's working. And he ends with the whole thing about, you're Harvard, I'll get your daughter into Harvard and all this stuff, right? And he's like, nah, man, you're like, you fucked up. And I love Ray Romano's like whole part and bit in that whole scene. And every other thing. He's been doing a lot of good stuff like that from The Irishman and
other. Yeah, I was gonna mention that.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. I like him lately.
Cool.
Movies. Anything else?
No, I got nothing else.
All right. That's our review for Bad Education. By the way, rip-off title from Pedro Almodovar's movie, Bad Education. I was going to say, different movie. Way different. Could not be more different. But good movie nonetheless. So that's on HBO.
What would you have named it?
No, I'm saying because the other Bad Education.
Bad Accounting.
Bad Accounting.
Bad account.
Number Crunchers. No, I don't know. All right, so that's it for review. Check the movie out on HBO. We're going to take a little break. When we come back, we're going to review our second film of the evening, which is a documentary called What, Ralph?
Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind.
That's true. Stay with us.
The day my mom died, my entire world was shattered. Since then, there's been so much focus on how she died that it's overshadowed who she was as a person. I am Natasha Gregson-Wagner, and my mom was Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood falls into the category of an icon.
She's like this mythology character.
She had a big heart, and that showed up in her work.
I've enjoyed the part where you act, not the stardom that follows it.
The studio system controlled everything in her life.
She wanted to have control over the choices.
I did get the right to choose West Side Story.
She was one of the few women that had that power.
Exploring Natalie Wood's life and career through the unique perspective of her daughter, Natasha Gregson-Wagner, that would say Warner, and others who knew her best. This is Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind, a documentary about Natalie Wood. Let's go with Oscar on this one. Oscar, what is your first impression of this movie? Or documentary?
I thought this movie was, you know, just fine. I don't think it gave any kind of real perspective on the person beyond what has already been known, I think, out there for this famous actress. I know it's famous actress beyond our time. I've only seen three of her movies. I mean, I haven't seen that many either. It's not like I'm a big Natalie Wood fan or huge... granted, the information, or I should say what this documentary explores and like her childhood and the roles and so on and so forth, the kind of woman she was for the people around her, let's say. I think all that stuff was new to me, but, it just showed it fine. It was just like nothing like the style or anything like that. It wasn't so intriguing or invigorating unless you are a Natalie Wood fan, I think. It's kind of meant for people who find the subject fascinating, maybe, or something like that. So it's hard for me to break through its barrier, the barrier of it being a documentary about just one person's life. And one person's life through the eyes of a career, primarily. I know that they deal with their family, too, but, like, it's mainly that. And it's, I feel like I've seen many of these, because I have seen many Hollywood documentaries like of this nature, and... they feel pretty much in the same ballpark. So I guess I didn't feel that much underwhelmed or overwhelmed. I just felt normally whelmed on the movie. And that's my stance.
Okay. Hmm. Interesting. I'll go with mine, and then Luke will finish it off. I would say for me, it was... I'm somebody who knows next to nothing. I knew... When I Googled who the person was, or IMDb'd, I was like, oh, okay, I've seen her before in some random things. But other than that, I really didn't know anything or much about anything about her. So it was a kind of a cool thing for me. I would say it's definitely a paint-by-numbers kind of documentary. It is, I want to say, it doesn't want to deep dive anything too crazy about her life specifically, besides the fact that she was... what she accomplished and stuff like that, and what she managed to do, and who she meant, what she meant for people who were, you know, beloved by her, and stuff like that. But other than that, I mean, it was okay. I mean, I had fun watching the movie and enjoying about learning about about her life, her life's work and stuff like that. But, everything else I felt like, didn't most people know this? And I guess, I wasn't one of them, which is funny, but I was like, didn't most people know this already? People are more here for other reasons, I guess, or more reasons than the normal, that we could have just, I guess, Googled about her career. yeah, besides that, I just didn't feel like it wasn't as needed, I guess, as just because her life wasn't as crazy, but it was at the same time. So I don't know. That feels very, very, very weird. That's why I'm just okay with it. It's just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Luke, what did you think?
All right. I thought it was a very okay documentary at best. I also had no idea who Natalie Wood was, nor did I want to Google her or anything about her, because I heard that something had recently happened about her.
So I was like, that's why I only IMDb her. Yeah.
I'm trying to avoid everything about her. I didn't even know she was an actress. I knew nothing.
Oh, really?
Okay.
Never heard of
her? Yeah, huh?
Never seen West Side Story?
No.
Okay.
Likewise.
Oh, wow.
I saw Rebel Without a Cause, but
that's
I don't remember her.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah. So I knew nothing about it. And as I'm watching this, you know, documentary, I'm like, okay, get it. Like, you know, the early life, the movies, everything going. But I'm like, what's the point of this documentary? That's what I kept thinking. So like, why am I watching this documentary? Why did they make a documentary about her?
Right, right.
And then when they got towards the end, I was like, okay. And that was it.
Yeah.
It felt like a spotlight, yeah. You know, just.
Yeah, definitely.
One of those, like maybe like an hour and something minute long version of, you know, when the Oscars show the people who died that year, you know, like one of those.
Yeah.
Like what they've done kind of things. And I guess I don't get it ultimately why the need to make it or to make it now even necessarily. I don't know. I mean, the only thing, and well, it's in spoilers, so maybe we should just get to it. I don't know. Should we have spoilers? I mean, it's a new movie, so we should. So it's a documentary regardless, but, and we said basically what it shows, but, there is one aspect, I guess we could get into in spoilers. So let's get into now and then we can be more free. So spoilers for Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind, starting right now.
My mom had a string of relationships.
RJ was the love of her life. It was like two parts of the same whole.
Nat and RJ were both major stars.
Natalie and I got married in Paradise Cove. We got the boat together and spent most weekends in Catalina.
That night I went below and she wasn't there.
Natalie was gone.
We've stayed connected through all of it. What do we think about reopening this case?
I don't think there's a day that has ever gone by that I haven't thought about Natalie.
I'm an actress and a wife, a mother.
She was larger than life, not because she was famous, that was just her.
Her vulnerabilities, passion, strength, and intelligence. All of that is there.
All right. The only thing is that
she died.
Well, yeah.
Sorry,
shocker.
That young. Wait.
She did die young. Yes. Young. Yeah. Yeah. So I felt like she was in her 50s.
Young. Yeah. But Hollywood old.
But Hollywood old.
She died
for her.
Yeah.
No. So I thought she was in her 50s when she died, and I was like, oh, she was only in her 40s. I was like, that's fucked up.
Yeah. I mean, I guess when you put a number like that to it, I mean, it doesn't matter. Young is young. I mean, I think anything below 60 is probably young. I don't know.
Shit, at this point, probably below 70 is young.
Yeah, probably, right? Nowadays with the life expectancy, right? So I thought that the only thing is that this movie is trying to like lend a different viewpoint as to whether or not she died accidentally or someone killed her or the responsibility that people took upon themselves to give to the husband or to herself, like Natalie Wood's character herself. Like, I think that maybe that's what the documentary was kind of trying to put to rest on, because it's through the perspective of her daughter, right? At least a large part of it is. And they do interview the husband, right, that was there on the boat, right, I believe, and all that. The movie does get into it. It takes a while, though, to get into it. But it's not the highlight of the movie. It's not the thesis of the movie.
No, but that's not what the movie's called either. It's called What Remains Behind. So it means it's like what she left behind. Right.
And that's why they spotlight showing the movies like Leaves of Grass and Miracle on 34th Street and all that. But like how she starred in a commercial, whatever.
Which, again, I've seen Miracle on 34th Street. I just never knew that was her.
Yes, I've seen it too. Yeah, the three movies I've seen is West Side Story, Rebel Without a Cause, and Miracle on 34th Street. Those are the only two movies I've seen.
I've seen two of those three.
One of those three.
We asked someone else, it's zero of those three. And yeah, and I guess as far as What Remains Behind, like, we could just look at our IMDb page. I don't understand.
Right.
Yeah. Beyond, I mean, again, beyond the maybe, but I felt like the movie didn't. I mean, I don't know. I guess it didn't feel that big of a deal for them to put the way they showed, like, how she died.
Yeah.
You know, and because they do mention, like, how big it was at the time in the 80s, the tabloids, right?
Right.
The pestering of reporters and that aunt of them, the aunt of the daughter or that one family member who was, like, saying, like, all this crazy shit. And she was doing interviews about, like, oh, yeah, she was killed or something. Is that what she said? Or I don't remember what she said. That was, like, negligence or something like that. And that they were fighting and all this stuff. And that was why she died. And I'm like, right. Well, no, I mean, she had a little bit of history of suicide attempt, kind of, right? A call for help, they called it in the movie, but it was an attempt. And they talk about right. that, and they talk about pills, they talk about all this other stuff. And I'm like, okay. So and the movie doesn't, but it's at the same time, it's just like another chapter in this spotlight documentary. And I don't know how I felt about it, I guess. Not really buying that, the gravity of how much I should care about how she died, when it was just tragic. It was just a tragic death. You know,
it was a tragic death.
It sucks. I mean, I don't want that right. to happen, but I mean, I can't take anything beyond that. Or I didn't. I mean, so I don't know. I guess I don't know. I just don't know. Or maybe I don't care. What do you guys think?
No, that's the problem I had. I had the same problem that Luke said and you just said in an elongated version, which was like come the end of the movie, and I was like, oh, okay. I was like, oh, okay. That's cool, and it was cool for me, like, because I got to know about her, and that was cool that she got to push, like, the agenda of the woman's agenda and stuff like that, and just be this kind of impactful, you know, actress, who she was, or actor, and everything like that. But that was awesome. Yeah, it was great. But I just didn't know if I needed this. Like, I would have never Googled her beforehand, so that's cool on that aspect. But I just felt like I didn't know, like, what. I'm not saying you need something controversial for you to make a movie or a documentary about somebody's life. But at the same time, you have something controversial and you decided to not talk about it. Or talk almost next to nothing.
Well, we don't know if they had finished it and didn't have, like, that information or whatever. I mean, that did come out pretty recently, the new information stuff. So
yeah, which I don't even know about at all. So you can talk about that. We can talk about that if you want. We'll get into that.
Yes, we can get into it right now.
Probably seems more interesting than the actual documentary.
Well, I really thought that's what this movie was going to be about, exploring that.
And oh, okay.
Because HBO does, I mean, they do a lot of documentaries. A lot of them have to be about a lot of famous people, a lot of iconic people. I mean, a lot of them are really good. Like, you think of the one they did with Dr. Dre and the guy who did his partner who did the beats with him, the manager.
Yeah, that was a really good one. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Series. That was a really good series. Sometimes they do really good ones. Then they do others that are kind of, like, you know, kind of forgotten about right away. As soon as, like, Natalie Wood, like, this was one of them, you know, that just comes and goes and doesn't seem to provide anything new or new angle or anything like that to talk about. And I thought this was going to be one of those bigger ones. So the controversy is that, Kirk Douglas, famous actor, a huge actor, he died age 103, I think last year. I believe it was last year. And soon after, or maybe it was last year when the news came out. So I don't know how the news got started, but in The Guardian and in other newspaper articles, they were releasing how he was involved in, like, Hollywood. This is a shadow version of Hollywood, right? Hollywood players taking advantage of young starlets like Natalie Wood sexually back then in order to get them the stardom that they are known for now, you know? And you hear a lot of these stories. There's a lot of them. A lot of them are very true. You should just read a little bit and you'll see a lot of actors. I mean, Marilyn Monroe's a huge one, had a lot of those things. And not to mention being a sexual icon in their heyday. Did no favors for her, right? And other people like that too. It was the lady who did Wizard of Oz. What was her name? Fuck me, I forget. Whatever. A lot of them. Right. And people.
If her name was Fuck Me, I Forget, they would take advantage of that.
Right. and I mean, I mean, it's still very fresh now. Rose McGowan, who's still alive. I mean, this 90s actress, right? This happened. I mean, Bob Weinstein. We know all this stuff that's been happening. And it's been happening.
Bobby?
Was it Harvey?
Harvey Weinstein.
Harvey, whatever. One of those.
Yeah. Did you call him Bobby?
He said Bob Weinstein. So I was like, Bobby?
Bob?
There's a Bob, right?
Robert? I don't know either.
I'm not getting into those names.
Whatever. My point is that it's not unheard of. So that this was new, right? That this big actor who just died was a part of this whole thing, you know? And apparently a lot of people are also accusing him of killing an actress, an up-and-comer actress at the time, I guess, or something like that. Like, he was a very brutal individual, a lot of, like, things on set that he did and stuff like that. You hear a lot of that when it comes to big actors or big directors and stuff like that. You hear a lot of that stuff. I mean, Stanley Kubrick, famously a mean asshole on set. Things like that. And but Kirk Douglas apparently was a significant kind that now it's being untruth. And Natalie Wood was a big epicenter, like, cause that people revolved around, you know. And again, this was new. So when Roth chose this movie, I thought that that's what this movie was going to be about, you know, uncovering this new information and investigating it, you know, and seeing what they come up with and seeing if it's true or seeing what people think, if they can't corroborate or whatever. But none of that came out. So I guess I was pre-bummed out by it, but that makes the movie's existence, I don't know, like, less known. I don't know why this movie was made, honestly. So I don't know. It's just whatever. But that's the controversy. That's what's been happening. That's the new stuff.
Yeah.
Now that I'd want to see a documentary about.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's tragic. It's news. It's what news people would call news. Of course, that's something that would lead. That was something people would be attracted to. It's newsworthy, you know. And this documentary, the rest of it, wasn't as newsworthy because all this was heavily covered and tabloided and exaggerated in the '80s. And if you were a Natalie Wood fan, you would know all this stuff already, right? That's how it works. Especially if you were around when these movies at first were coming out. When she was the Jennifer Lawrence of her day or whatever.
Right.
But, none of us were, so we don't know, so we didn't care, and whatever. So, yeah. So, I guess that's how we come up on it. It's not very positive on this movie. Not that it's a bad movie. It's made well. It's all that. So, you know, it's fine. But nothing beyond that. And I wish I could give you guys, you too, and our audience, more on... I only read one thing about the whole Kirk Douglas thing, and there's a lot more out there. So, if you guys want to look it up, anyone out there, you get on your own time. And figure it out for yourself or find out if it's really, really true. From what I read, it seems like that part is true. The Kirk Douglas, Natalie Wood hotel thing, apparently that was. How much further it goes, I don't know. But yeah. Go look it up. I'm sure there's going to be a movie about it someday. Or a book, maybe. Or there already is a book. I don't know. All right. And I think that's all we got on this movie. Natalie Wood, What Remains Behind. We're going to take a little break here. And upon returning, we're going to discuss a movie even older than these movies we're talking about. It's going to be 1931's City Lights, right? So stay with us.
Correct. Yep. With the aid of a wealthy, erratic tippler, a dewy-eyed tramp who has fallen in love with a sightless flower girl accumulates money to be able to help her medically.
They prefer to be called less of sight.
Less of sight. This is City Lights, a G-rated movie. What's it called? Written and directed by Charles Chaplin. Not Charlie, according to this. Charlton Chaplin. Charlton Chaplin, yeah. Mm-hmm. Virginia Cheryl's starring, Harry Myers, Alistair Garcia.
Everyone's dead.
Al Ernest. Everyone's dead, yes. Hank Mann, Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah.
A tramp as Charlie Chaplin.
Everyone in the background. Think about it.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy, isn't it?
I don't know. There could be like a little kid somewhere in the background.
Even then, it would have to be like over 100 years old, or just about 100 years old right now.
No, this came out, so it was filmed in like, 1930?
So 90 years old. 1931, yeah. So like 90 years old.
Yeah. See? He's probably getting those residual...
I highly doubt that.
Yeah, where are you going to go with this, huh? Let's just go with the most likeliness of his.
Anyways, I'll go first on this one. Never seen it before. I enjoyed the crap out of this movie. I was laughing a lot of the times in this movie. It was still funny. A lot of stuff going on in the movie. I can see a lot of imitation came from here. A lot of people have imitated from this. I've known of Charlie. I mean, I've seen other works of Charlie Chaplin. Don't get me wrong, but I just haven't seen this one. And it's a really good, really cool movie to watch. And I particularly find very amusing the way he walks. It's just like, it's so simple yet so difficult, because I'm like, I can't even begin to do that the whole movie, like the whole movie. I don't know. I found it a worthy movie to be up there. I mean, it's got a 99 Metacritic score.
Oh yeah, it's really beloved.
I mean, but it is very beloved, and I even like the beginning of like how fucking Charlie Brown steals from this for the kazoos of talking of everybody talking in the beginning of the movie, and really there's nobody talking because it's just like wah 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 wah, wah. Yeah. Like who gives a fuck, like we don't care what they're saying. Mm-hmm. It's just bullshit, and I was like, this is hilarious, like that's fantastic. I liked a lot of the stuff in the movie. I even liked the fact that his pants are ripped the whole movie, because he never has another pair of pants like from the beginning of the movie. Little things like that. I really did appreciate this movie. Good pick on my end. I'm patting myself on the back. Other than that, Luke, what did you think of this movie?
I fucking hated the first couple of minutes. The kazoos drove me fucking batshit crazy. And I was like, oh my God, if this continues through this whole movie, I'm going to fucking mute it.
I mean, it's a silent movie.
Yeah.
It's so goddamn annoying.
Is it like a dog? I do remember the kind of or something.
No, okay. Just did not like the way it sounded. It was so annoying.
Because he starts arf, arf.
Overall, that was an okay movie. You know, I mean, for its time, I'm sure it was remarkable or whatnot. It's aged quite a while, so it's okay.
All right.
Okay, Oscar.
Oh, yeah, I love this movie. I mean, I had a huge Chaplin phase a few years ago. We were recording, was it this show in the beginning or was it the last show? I don't remember. But I watched like a shit ton of his short films. MUBI had like a short film marathon of Chaplin, and I watched them all. And he's so funny. He's like one of the kings of physical comedy. You know, because everything had to be physical, and there's no audio devices back then. So,
right.
Like the music that people would hear in the movie theater when they would watch this movie in 1931, it was a piano player in the audience with them that would provide the soundtrack. That's how it worked. Nice. That's the only way they could do it. And sometimes if they're really fancy, they'll provide the whole orchestra, right? Because we heard more instruments than
with kazoos.
Yes. With kazoos, they would do everything. They would do the thunder effect. Now they do all that. Yeah, they used to. All that was provided. That, a lot more jobs were available. Is my point, and those jobs went to people that did them. So yeah, this movie it's really great. I mean, the guy is unique. That's why he's super super famous. About like that's why he's kind of untouchable in many ways. He's done so many, not just this one. He did the Great Dictator, or is it just the Dictator? I don't remember. Really, really good. Like that was one of the earlier. He talks in that one, and a very good Hitler analogy there. Really good stuff, and he's done amazingly wonderful comedy stuff. He cannot not be funny. The guy cannot be. He just constantly is funny all the time. Yeah. Everything he does, the way he eats, the way he walks, as Ralph said, the way, I mean, and you just add something actually comedic to it, like him falling or him eating a bar of soap by accident or whatever the right. hell. Like, it's just to makes it that much funnier. He just constantly barrels a laughter out of me, you know, and he did it in his movie too, City Lights. But ultimately, this movie is a love story. Now, kind of a long way to call it a love story. It's like a simple love story, but also a man looking for, like, survival in a way. Like, you could say maybe it has those two kind of simple plots to it.
Yeah, almost a reason to live also. Like, a reason to just get something it's going like in his life.
He didn't care about having money until he met someone that he wanted to provide for, right? I guess you could say, in the simplest way. And, you know, that's when he, like, oh, man, I should get a job. Oh, man, I should, you know, try to get some money to help her site.
Try to keep a job.
Keep a job that he couldn't keep.
Yeah, they could not
keep. Well, the thing is that he's so daffy and goofy and ridiculous or whatever. He's so spastic or bad luck or whatever you want to call it that he can't keep one. You know, like, life keeps spitting him out. But I think this is, I mean, but ultimately this is a comedy and a love story, secondly. And I guess my question would be, what were our favorite, like, set pieces? Because that's another thing. This movie has set pieces to it. So do you guys have one that stands out above the rest? Anyone can do it.
I want to say the beginning, but with the statues. Because it's great. I mean, it just literally sets you up for the movie. What it's going to be, what it can be. Expect stuff like this.
Yeah.
But the dance scene also, that set piece where they're at the dance floor, when they go eat at the restaurant. Yeah. That's a really good one as well.
Yeah.
Okay. So the beginning of the movie with the whole statue thing. I think this is weird. I think they did like an actual crane shot or something like that. Because they had this whole like thing where it was like I think the camera like lifted up, was like looking at the crowd, and I was like, huh. I thought it was kind of weird because I thought movies back then were like kind of like all on stages and things like that.
No, a lot of it was on stage for sure, but you could. It's hard, but you can bring. That's why they had big studio lots back then. They would they would build fake streets and all that. But yeah, no, they had cranes. The cameras were about as heavy as a house, but they had cranes.
Right. Took 20 men just to get that thing up 3 inches.
And the most you could shoot a film in one sitting, like the longest a scene could be back then was about 2 minutes long, not even. I think, I'm not 100%, but like the reel would not go beyond. You have to re-crank it and stop it, you know.
Huh, for real? Yeah.
So like, that's why all the shots took forever. I know you're joking. Yeah, that's why all the shots, you know, they have to constantly change them or edit around because they had to shoot again. They can't keep shooting. But yeah, you were saying, what else did you like?
No. Those are the two standout ones for me.
No, I mean, that's what I was saying. For Luke.
Oh, for Luke, yeah.
Another one was the whole suicide thing. I'm like, it's pretty risque for 1930. They were trying to kill himself like multiple times.
I mean, people were just as fucked up as we are today. Just they didn't show it on their movies as much. That's all.
No, I agree, yeah. But still.
Also for a G movie.
Well, they had no ratings right back then, so yeah.
No, they
also had a lot of smoking and drinking.
That's why I bring up the G rating part.
Right. Yeah. What was that one? My favorite movie that's rated G is 2001: Space Odyssey because it was before. They didn't know what to rate that thing, and there was no ratings. So technically, that's a G movie, but it's not reality. It's not really a G movie.
Right. That's I love like those little things that you can just kind of jab for.
Yeah.
Well, so it's like a PG movie.
No. There was no ratings. So it's technically.
What would you have rated it now?
Oh, I would rate it like a PG-13, maybe even rated R. I mean, it's some hardcore. I mean, I don't know. The monkey's killing.
PG.
What? Okay.
He's talking about 2001.
Space
Odyssey.
Oh, yeah, Space Odyssey. Yeah, I'm talking about Space Odyssey. But, okay, whatever. This movie, I would rate like a PG. Whatever. Yeah, a PG. Not a G, though. Anyway, do you have any other scenes, Luke, that stood out for you?
No.
See, for me, it was...
I think the boxing one was kind of one that's always great, been shown around.
Yeah. But I've seen that scene before. So
yeah,
for the first time, I've seen that's a popular scene that I've seen it before.
Yeah, sometimes you see it in the background of characters in movies watching it or something. Is that what you mean?
No, I've actually seen like a YouTube clip of that, like Charlie Chaplin, like best moments or something. Okay. And I've seen that, not like the whole thing. Yeah. So like that is a really good scene to watch.
Yeah.
But I have seen the fight of like him following the ref, you know, and everything. It's fucking hilarious. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that scene. It's one of my favorites. It has good timing with the bell and when it's around his neck and the fighter's coming in and out. And you actually think he's going to win. Like, you don't know, right?
And, no, you don't. That's great. They do a really good job in the movie.
Right, but he fails again after already losing his job and failing that, right? And then you know, and then we go to the... So my second favorite will be, like, him at the... After that scene, he goes to the millionaire's house where he's drunk again, right?
That's right.
this guy has a really big alcoholic problem. And he's at the house and there's two huge burglars there. And the whole thing with the burglars, like them knocking the dude out and then Charlie calling the police and all that and coming out of it. And ultimately, tricking the policeman and stuff before he gets arrested. All that was that was really funny. I really like that back and forth. Really funny stuff for me. But yeah, the guy is just, there's tons of that everywhere. The whole movie has that. Even the lighter moments, it's all about blocking and about pacing of itself and the way they walk and how they fall and how they made to look to fall. Like, you know, in the beginning, you know, after the whole statue scene in the opening, he has that part where he's like looking at the mannequin or something at a window and he's constantly almost falling into like a sewer grate.
Yes.
Or whatever. Like, that's a really, like, these are all short films. These are all little short films, basically. They'll tell a little story.
Yeah.
This guy is just enjoying this. He's kind of, maybe he's seeing reflection. Maybe he's seeing himself in the clothing that the shop is selling or something. And he's constantly standing back, double checking. He's almost falling.
I thought he was just trying to look at the naked statue and not seem like a perv.
Maybe that too. It could be any of those things. And then with the guy and then him almost falling and then the thing going down and the guy is like coming halfway up and he thinks, oh, I can take him. And then
I wonder how many times he messed up that scene or like potentially like just fell back.
Yes.
In the hole or whatever. Cause like you said, it has to be in one shot. You can't like, you know, like it was all one shot, you know, it's like the 2 minute thing, you know?
Yes.
So it's very simple, but very like also like
hard,
dangerous. Yeah,
dangerous for sure. I mean, back then for silent movies, it was easy to call out things. For example, like the elevator's coming up, you know, they would call out those things while they're shooting it because you can be loud, right? So cues like that existed and in real time when they're shooting it. There's always sounds and stuff like that. It's not like it was quiet on the set. There was no quiet needed on the set. So, yeah. And if
anyone... Right, we'll drown it out with kazoo and post.
Yeah. And the whole thing with, you know, how everyone is speeding up. They just sped up all the film back then. It was just different the way they filmed it. The whole 24 frames per second thing wasn't as much of a thing until later. But I would say that Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton, I almost picked a Buster Keaton movie for my next one. Because those two were like neck and neck for silent film stars and comedy stars because they were both huge.
Yeah.
And I almost picked one of his movies, but I didn't. But back then there were those two. I mean, Charlie Chaplin definitely won. He's like the Edison, and Buster Keaton maybe it might be the other guy. But they're both very successful.
Tesla.
That's the one. The one that got robbed off.
Nikolai Tesla.
Yeah, that guy. That's what I meant.
Oh God.
You know what I meant?
Nikolai Tesla. What I meant.
The love story though, pretty. But it was good. You know, I like how she recognize him with the hand feel because that was the one thing that he, you know, they always held each other's hands either accidentally or whatever. That was really nice, very endearing. I thought it was nice. Did you feel Luke that it was closure at the end?
I don't know. I'm sure she has a lot of questions like, why are you poor?
He actually looked poorer at the end when he got out of
jail. He's got out of jail.
Yeah, I know. I'm saying he looked even worse. I was just curious because the movie ended. I mean, maybe it was more obvious to audiences back then, I guess. But you just take it, right, as a fact that, you know, they found each other. It's all good now, right? I got that too. But it looked a little ambiguous, a little for me. The look wasn't as for sure as maybe I'm used to with movies nowadays. So, you know, there's a little bit of that for me. But yeah, it was very nice. Once they figure it out, it's done. The problems are done. Let's go. Let's move on. The end.
Also, I didn't know there was a cure for blindness.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. They had more stuff back then.
It was controversial. Yeah. They stopped after 1942.
Yeah. That's funny. But yeah, it's just, I mean, it's just a comedy, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Physical comedy is better to just like, we can't, us explaining is way worse than it is.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's a classic. Can anyone see, can you see, Ralph, why this movie is on this kind of list that we're in our marathon that we're doing?
Yeah, I mean, I have, of course. I can see why.
Yeah, man. Good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, yeah. I mean, I get why it's critically acclaimed and everything. It does a good job at, even now, like for somebody like me watching a movie like this, I totally appreciate everything it does.
Yeah. I think that one of the big things about it is that it's universal. Anyone from almost any age, well, not every age, but almost any age in any country can understand everything that's happening in the movie. Everyone, there's no loss in translation.
Yeah,
Know, that can occur. Those movies are kind of rare.
They're
rare movies that you can show to anyone on the planet.
Yeah. But the fear of look at his face though when he's in the, and what's it called though? In the locker room, and the guy he's about to fight punches out the guy who just beat the crap out of the other guy. He just lays him out in one punch, and he's like, "Oh shit!" Like, I'm gonna fucking die.
But that was like a three prong thing because he was rubbing.
He's like rubbing the horseshoe. Right? Yeah.
The guy comes back beaten up. They're trying to wake him up. He's trying to.
So he starts wiping it off of him.
He tries to wipe it off. He's like, "Fuck, this guy is not good." And then and then his opponent to be and the guy who just won the fight are fighting each other, and the guy knocks him up in one punch. He's like, "Fuck!" It's like a double. It just keeps raising his anxiety and his fear. It's really funny. That's also really funny. That was great.
Yeah.
But yeah, ultimately, that's all I have in this movie, City Lights.
Yeah, I mean, it's a cool little short. It's a short movie. It's but at the same time, it plays well, and everything works out. I mean, like I said, for a non-talkie.
For a non-talkie, that's right. All right, we're gonna call it there.
Silent.
I think we're gonna end it there, and you have been listening to another movie podcast. Don't forget to send us feedback over at podmoviecast@gmail.com, where you can send to your opinions on all these movies and any other thing we have talked about here, as well as checking out our website again. That is otherpodcast.com. I mean, everything is on your show notes, but just letting you know now. You can find me personally on Letterboxd and on Twitter at Armin Filmmaker, which is filmmaker with A-R-M-E-N. Luke?
At Slothmaster Luke.
Ralph?
At Don Rafael, underscore between somewhere.
Between somewhere, right. The word somewhere, that's in Don Rafael, right.
Exactly.
Yeah, right.
Glad you figured it out.
It's in there. All right. So we are a bi-weekly show, so we come out every other week. And next time, it's my turn for the movies. And I am going to choose, since we're choosing streaming services here as the main reasons to pick movies, I chose Shudder.com. So I know it's a little more rare, but I wanted to kind of focus on something, you know, off the beaten path. And I have a huge Shudder my list. So, and I don't want to dwindle that down a little bit. So I chose a movie called Noroi, The Curse, or Noroi, The Curse. It is, I think, a Japanese horror movie. It's on there. It's a Shudder exclusive, I believe. And I'm also choosing a movie called Monster Party. And that's an American movie, so don't worry, they're not all foreign movies. But it's Monster Party. It's on there as well. It's made by a guy who's kind of famous for doing other movies. I forget the guy's name, but he's done a lot of other great movies. This is one of his first. But Monster Party, I heard great things. I haven't seen either of these. So they're fresh for me as they will be, I assume, for you, Ralph, and you, Luke. Right? Have you guys seen them?
No.
Noroi the Curse. Noroi the Curse especially is made by the guy who did Hayaku versus Nerico, whatever. The one where they mixed the guy.
Oh, yeah.
The girl from The Ring and The Grudge.
Oh, yeah. I still didn't see that either.
Oh, okay. Well, that's the same director, I think. So if you've seen it out there, anyone, you guys can maybe anticipate what kind of horror to deal with here. And then we're going to conclude our show with also a similar kind of a horror thriller type movie from 1931 as well. I'm doing a Fritz Lang movie. It's called M, the famous M, just the letter M. So if you're out there looking, maybe you want to rent that or find it somewhere. for you guys to watch and ahead for the next show. And that's all we have. Until then, I am Oscar.
And Luke.
Mm-hmm. And Ralph.
All right. See you later.
Didn't fuck that one up. Arrivederci!